4D Story is an entertaining way to promote products and services in both online and offline environments. By broadcasting a fictional story with characters engineered around real life, 4D Story engages fans and encourages viral sharing.
Good morning and welcome to the 4D Leverage Blog Talk Radio program, where we amplify the movers and shakers of the emerging economy with content marketing. I am here with my co-host, Mr. Key and Samantha Sweetwater. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, good to hear you all. On today's show, we're going to discuss how to speed up your quest to gain more targeted traffic, leads, and sales through the art and science of our favorite thing, leverage. But we're going to be guided by the eyes and experiences of Mr. Jack Humphrey. Jack is our guest today. He is a master leveragist and co-author of the Leverage Black Book, which is a guide to getting to your biggest goals for your business faster using deeper tactics. For the last 16 years, Jack has taught thousands of people from small business to Fortune 1000 companies how to get more traffic through search, link building, and blog marketing. He's got books like Power Linking, The Authority Black Book, and Bending the Web, as well as the amazing Traffic Vortex. Co-founder of Blog Success, one of the first blogger training centers on the web, was started in 2006 to 2007 and has taught over 8,000 members how to build high-traffic, profitable blog-based sites. And Jack was one of the first three people in the world to ever crack the original Google algorithm preference for links, which was outlined in his first best-selling book, Power Linking, in 2002. And today we're going to hear all about the Leverage Black Book. It will revolutionize your approach to leverage. We're excited to have you with us this morning, Jack. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, glad to be here.
Awesome. Reading through that is just as much fun as having a discussion with you. You have so much to bring to the party when we open up this idea of leverage and we open up this idea of how we can use content marketing in this whole formula. So looking forward to what we are going to talk about today.
Me too. It's going to be awesome. I hope. I'll try my best.
Oh, no doubt. I remember when I was on your radio show, and you do a lot around this this idea of podcasting and radio broadcasting, using it in your leverage. But I remember how well you digested what came across and then regurgitated something so powerful. I still work at unpacking it all, even now, a month later, whatever the case may be. You have a real knack for being able to take this whole convoluted process of creating leverage in a business across the internet and making some very simple approaches to it, and I appreciate that. So I think that's what we're going to have a lot of fun with today, but I want to know a little bit about this idea of wildlife tracking that you occasionally bring to a conversation. Can we throw that out there right away just to get a feel for that?
Yeah, that's the weird little thing about me that most people don't know. I was in the nonprofit industry, environmental movement, for 11 years. I was an executive director of a couple organizations, and in Sky Island Alliance was my last one in New Mexico, and I used to take people out. City slickers, they were environmentalists, conservationists, they belonged to the Sierra Club and Nature Conservancy, but they were city slickers. They came from L.A. and New York, and they didn't know the first thing about really being out in real wilderness. And I would take them out there as a part of our program to show them how they could help directly. We would actually help the National Forest Service remove illegal roads and return them back to a natural state. And we would bring volunteers who would pay to come and support the organization and help with the work. And to get them to be really fired up about that, we would give them some little extra things. And while you're here, you'll learn how to track mountain lions and black bears and all that kind of stuff. And you'll learn some wilderness survival stuff. So, you know, they had plenty of incentive to get in a plane and pay a bunch of money to support the organization to do the stuff that we were doing and contribute sweat equity in ripping out these roads in the desert in incredible heat and everything else. So we gave him a reward, and I was in charge of giving him that entertainment. So we had Sue Morse from Keeping Track come in, and she is probably in North America one of the best trackers on the planet, actually. So she taught me, and I would take over and show people how to track. And I learned an awful lot from tracking. Anybody would, really. There's a lot of allegory to life and to business. And when I came online, the reason that I was one of the first people to discover Google's preference for links was my tracking background. I didn't have a programming background. I wasn't a geek. I didn't know much of anything about technology, really, just how to get on the web. And, you know, I was in the Warrior Forum way back when and all of that stuff, but I was just starting out. The only way I could possibly do that is to backtrack the success of really successful sites. So as a tracker, if you find a deer kill and you recognize, because you're trained to do so, if a bear killed that deer or if a mountain lion killed that deer, there's telltale signs of who done it. But you have to understand how that all transpired. You have to backtrack it. You never find it in progress. You always find it after the fact. Just like on the web, when you find sites that are really successful, they have a lot of traffic, a lot of just a lot of traction. You know, they're just really big sites. You can tell they're very successful. Usually, that's where you find them. And in the wild, that's a dead deer. That was a successful kill for a mountain lion trying to feed her cubs, so that's a big deal. Same thing. And so that's the only way I could do it. And I found that the sites were really, really well linked. And in the beginning, Google's algorithm wasn't nearly the monster that it is now. It was a very, very simple algorithm. If I had 1,001 links and James had 1,000 links, I would show up as number one and he'd show up as number two in Google search results. It was very, very rudimentary and simple back then. And it was actually a wonderful time, because once you knew that, all you had to do was go out and get any kind of link. And I'm talking about any kind of link. There was no such thing as link spam or anything back then. I just needed 1,001 links, and I beat James with 1,000. And that's how I figured it out. And I figured it out because of my tracking background. Because nobody else was looking at it that way. Everybody else was geeking out, and they were trying to figure out cracking algorithms and everything from a technical standpoint that I didn't understand, so I couldn't possibly do it that way. And lo and behold, I was able to write the book Power Linking. I had over 50,000 downloads of that, and that began the whole thing all the way up till today. Many businesses and pieces of software later.
I think it's so awesome that you have basically this model, which I'm big into. I think all of content can benefit from perceiving how you approach it from a model perspective. And you have this model, this tracking model, which I can only imagine has like never-ending gems of knowledge and understanding to go in search of, right? It's got to be an insatiable kind of appetite for you, that once you get into it, it just keeps feeding it, right? And you turn around and apply that to the web, where you're literally, I mean, you're a professional tracker. That's just awesome. So along the lines of the Google algorithm, and I'm not as much personally as on the technical side, and Key would probably even be able to speak to this as well, but how do you get a good sense of what Google is looking for across the landscape of their maturity, other than hearing, you know, different press releases of what's going on or whatever? Do you have kind of a way that you stay in touch with what Google's overall approach to what's on the web and its process of ranking things? How do you do that? How do you keep yourself very on that leading edge of that?
I'm still a real hippie about it. I have no process. Like the SEO guys, when you type a question in Google and whoever comes up to answer that question, it's usually a firm, an SEO firm, and it's got some geeks behind it. And once again, I've stayed pretty far away from becoming a geek. I mean, I am totally a geek by any normal person standards, but from a real dyed-in-the-wool SEO person, I'm no kind of geek at all. I don't even stack up. And so I keep a real – I keep – Google taught me how to do SEO by the way that they look at sites. You know, make it very clear from the very, very beginning, they made it clear we don't look at meta tags. We don't look at – we look at the front of the page because we want to see what people see. And it doesn't mean that Google technically doesn't look at meta tags, but they just don't need it because they never wanted to focus on the code on the back of a site so much as what was on the front of a site. They've always developed toward the front of a site, you know, for their algorithm and everything else. And I'm like, well, that's kind of how I learned SEO too. So I only pay attention to, you know, it's good to have keywords. It's probably good to have meta tags because of Bing or something like that. So I always put that stuff in as an afterthought, but I really just focus on what Google focuses on. And when I started out, in blogging, I was a marketer. I was one of the first marketers to start a blog in the world. And that may sound just really stupid because now everybody runs on WordPress and has a blog, but there was a time in history when everybody thought bloggers were just kids that would talk about you know, the boy they had a crush on in school and, you know, people who were writing, you know, very personal stuff or authors or that's all it was. It really, that's all it was. And if somebody who was a blogger crossed over and put an ad on their blog, their community would freak the hell out. They would lose their ever-loving minds because they sold out. You put an ad? You're making money at this now? So that's the environment we were in. And I had a very, just like everybody else in marketing at the time, had a very adversarial relationship with Google. And I started Content Desk, and those were basically, it was a system to build sites that would satisfy Google search by pretty much spamming Google, and according to Google's, you know, terms, and get people to immediately want to escape the site that they just landed on by any means necessary, and we facilitated it with Google AdSense. So we were building AdSense sites, content sites, that had really, truly no value in the world whatsoever, and once you got there, you wanted out. We made sure that the way that you took out was through one of our AdSense links so we could get paid. That's the kind of thing that's where my mind was when I saw Google's terms of service basically saying, if you take care of your people, if you take care of your audience, we'll take care of you. Please stop trying to pay attention to us. Pretend as though we don't exist. And I'm like, yeah, right. And then there was the whole, everybody was still talking about Google's model, don't be evil. And I wanted to prove that Google could probably maybe border on at least being a little evil. So I started a blog. I wanted to prove them wrong. I started the Friday Traffic Report, and I started serving my audience. And I put that in air quotes just now because I was kind of half-heartedly doing it. I wanted to just prove them wrong, that they are not interested in that, that we do have to do SEO because they'll never give us a chance unless we get an edge and kind of sneak our way into Google by over-SEO or over-optimizing for our keywords. And you can probably guess what happened. I soon became the biggest Google fanboy in the world. I soon began telling everybody, you need to blog. You need to get rid of Dreamweaver and FrontPage and put WordPress on your site and blog. Because look at the traffic I'm getting. And I was basically doing what I called post and rank. I would post something, and I would be number one for it the next day. Post and rank. It was just a beautiful, beautiful time in history when it was effortless to get all the exposure you wanted just by writing something, putting it up, making a couple of links to it, and in 24 hours you were number one or in the top five because nobody else was really competing on any level. Nobody had WordPress on their site. They all had these unoptimized HTML sites that they couldn't figure out how to do it. And they were just reading my book saying, well, I just got to get 10 million links. Well, things were already starting to change. And so I had to tell everybody instead of what I was trying to prove here, actually Google's telling the truth. If I can get people to be excited, if I can get them to comment on my stuff, if I can write things that move people, that really serve people, answer questions and issues and problems that people are having, And they enjoy that. They like that. This is before social media kicked in. So that Google had to, you know, had a piece of their algorithm. They had to expand it to include comments. That's how they first started to judge engagement on the web, was the comments that were native to WordPress. Now, hardly anybody uses native WordPress comments, if they use comments at all, because nobody comments on blogs anymore. They go back to social and comment on them. So, but back then, that's how it went. So through all of that, it really taught me just to look at the surface, just like Google does. They do look in the back end. They do look at some technical things, but they're predominantly still to this day really interested in how people engage with your stuff. It used to be links. Then people like me figured out how to spam that, so Google had to raise their game. And it's been a cold war from the very beginning since 1998 between publishers and Google. You know, we get a little smarter, then Google would have to raise their algorithm so that we could, you know, they could normalize their search results again so that they were good. They had to remain, you know, the multi-billion dollar per quarter number one search engine on the planet. If our crappy results kept showing up, it was going to ruin them to the tune of billions of dollars. So they hired the most intelligent people in the world, the biggest engineers in the world, and threw all the money they possibly could at it to protect that. And here we were with no billions of dollars and definitely not the smartest people in the world. We sort of started to get worn down and tired and said, well, maybe we just should just do what Google says. And we started to do that, and now you've got the entire internet is talking about how to do that, except everybody's trying to do that now. Everybody's trying to put out their Pulitzer Prize-winning blog post for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. You know, and that's got its own set of problems, but the reason that everybody's doing that is the word got out. Quality sells. Quality sells clicks, attention, desire, the following, engagement, and that's everything that everybody wants. So now we're to the point where you guys come in, and it's, you know, how do we get on top of that part? Because now everybody's doing that, and everybody's bringing their A game. Everybody's really trying to put out some really good stuff. I'm talking about the top 1, 2, 3% in any market. Everybody else is still in the junk industry or they're amateurs or whatever, but every industry worth being in and monetizing has the top 3% players who really, really bring their A game. And in order to compete in that, because the 3% is all that matters, that's what people make their choice from, is the top 3 in search and in everything else. That's where people choose where they're going to go. It's irrelevant to talk about the fact that there's 9 million search results for a keyword. The only ones that matter are the top 3. And so that's where we are now, is refining how can you get an edge in this kind of environment where the word is out and everybody knows you're supposed to put really good stuff up and it's supposed to get engaged really, really heavily on social media and everything, because we all know that Google's watching that, the surface stuff, not the behind-the-scenes coding and everything else. So that's kind of how I look at SEO. It's a qualitative now, not quantitative, look at how to score big in search.
Jack, this is Samantha. I want to ask you a question. It's so beautiful. You're like giving us the Jedi warrior tools in such a refined and receivable way. It's so awesome. And I want to ask you a 4D question, which is, this might sound a little hippie, but I know you're going to play with me with this, is how do you hold that in your heart? Like, you're giving us the mental game. What's the heart game on dialing this? So, like, when you feel into your – the way I've been looking at it is, you know, if we're serving real people with their real needs and we can really feel them empathetically, then we can also navigate the Google search engines because we're talking to their heart. So how do you do that? How do you sit in the heart of the service you're providing and the value you're providing to real people? Can you speak about it from that angle?
Yeah. I just did yesterday to a group, and I think they're still thinking about it a little bit because I don't hear a lot of people talking about it this way. But I was talking about Gary Vaynerchuk, and every time you mention his name, you have to excuse the fact that you're mentioning his name by saying, I know he drops a lot of F-bombs, but hear me out. He's really, really smart. Nothing frustrates Gary Vaynerchuk in the world more than having to slow down on his mission and his passion for delivering what he wants to deliver in the world than having to constantly answer for people who say you shouldn't cuss in business. You shouldn't do that. And, you know, people say they're very frustrated. They might unsubscribe. They might disengage with them and all that kind of stuff. But I guarantee you there's nobody on the planet more frustrated with that than Gary Vaynerchuk himself. Because when you put something in your heart, when you're a passion-driven person, you don't care and you don't constantly take a selfie of yourself being a marketer every 5 seconds. Like most amateur marketers do, they learn something and then they carry that book learning around with them and they've got their book open in front of them, so to speak, when they're talking to other people. And it's like you can look at them and it's like, well, you're just carrying the book around. And you're reading right out of page 9. That was page 9, chapter 3 you just did in the marketing handbook. And it's really, really obvious and it's really painful to watch for those of us who see people doing that. I mean, you got to learn and everything, but what people don't understand is people who are passion-driven will go through life and they'll go through business just needing to get the thing done that they came here to do. And nothing gets in their way. So when you ask, you know, how do you hold this in your heart, it's all about passion. It's all about what you need to do. And if that isn't in existence right now in your business and in your life, then if you were coming to me for consulting, I would have to tell you I can't help you. Because you've got to have at least that. You've got to be here for more than money. You've got to be here for more than that. And the thing is, when you are here for more than the money, you're really here with the passion and the drive and the determination to make the world a better place in whatever way that your product or service does that. And it can be done. I mean, even if you make shoes. Because you know why? Because here's another one. Here's another Gary Vaynerchuk. It's a pure passion person going through the world just wanting to accomplish their mission. It's called Tom Shoes. So if you think inanimate objects and something outside the world of self-help and things is not going to actually cut the mold for this, you're wrong. Because one of the people who are driving this forward is the company called Tom Shoes. That's where a lot of people, a lot of giant companies now are getting the idea that you can do good in the world and do good in the world of your banking and finance. You can do good on both fronts. But paying attention to the good first, the money comes second. And so what I try to encourage people to do is really, like you said, like I don't use that phrase, but it's exactly what I'm saying, is carry this around in your heart. What is it you want to do? And then you will start to make the right moves. And that really ties into the Google discussion before, because Google loves people like Gary Vaynerchuk and Tom Shoes. They love them because they're not obviously not paying attention to Google. Google wants to observe the world being the world. They want to observe people who are really passionate, and they can tell how passionate they are by how much engagement they get from other people. When they put content out, when they put statements out on social media and just tons of people engage and like and love and share and comment, that's what Google wants. And that's really truly what we want too, because if you become too self-conscious of the things that you've learned about marketing and about communications and getting your message out, it's going to be very, very apparent when you do those things. It's going to be, because it's kind of like leaving the tag on your hat and putting it on your head and walking around in public with it. You've just left the tag on your hat. You're too self-conscious about what you are doing, and you need to just get down to doing what you need to do. And make the mistakes. Don't worry about it. You'll probably make fewer mistakes being unconscious of it than when you're being too conscious of it. Like when you water ski, you've got to get in that water. You've got to be on top of that water. You've got to be the water. You've got to be on top of that thing. You can't think about the technique of water skiing while you're trying to do it. You will fall on your face. At 40 miles an hour, that's a hard thing to deal with, falling on your face. You have to forget that you're on skis. And that's my definition of how you would, take what you're doing to heart, and everything else will follow, everything.
So along that line of what we have just discussed about the history of how Google pays attention to us, and we are now building this relationship with Google, each individual, on how we interact with it and how it promotes us and helps us. I mean, there's really this serious intent one-to-one relationship that we all have with this idea of search results, whether it's Google, Bing, Yahoo, et cetera. But we now also know, and it's continuing to mature. So along the lines of what you just said, it seems like Google is trying to shape themselves to us to understand our context, to understand our intent, and to really understand the face and the persona of each one of us as we approach the web, as we use our voices to do searches, as we come up with ever whatever language we want to use to interact. We're not as conforming to the machine as much now as the machine is having to conform to us. And we now know that Google uses some artificial intelligence now, 15 to 18% in their algorithm. And so what they're doing is you know, they're taking in whatever they're taking in on a Google search, they're taking in from the social site, and that has its own. They've already had their own, I'm sure, elements of filtering before they pass something off to Google. And then Google's also looking at all these different artificial intelligence algorithms that are bringing some real life to the matter, a real, if you will, personable approach. And so all of these hooks that we've created before, though they still have validity, they're starting to get deeper and deeper into the paradigm of what you have to represent yourself as in order to be properly noticed by the search engines. And it appears that they are literally shaping themselves into being able to synthesize with our content so well, and being able to recognize patterns in our content and consistency in our content. And they literally want to match our voice to the voice that's looking for us. I mean, I think that's where they're trying to get to, almost a fluid interaction, and that substantiates everything you're saying there. That next step is how you show up with content and how you shape your content to truly represent who you are. And I think the algorithms are getting wiser about recognizing the integrity of our story. Maybe you could speak to that, Key.
Well, yeah, definitely.
Go ahead, Jack. Okay.
I was just going to say, Google has only wanted to be a person. Google wants to be a person. There's no better algorithm on the planet than a human being for calling BS and knowing what they like and what they don't like. From the very, very beginning, all Google has ever wanted, and the reason that they've developed AI is for that particular purpose, and for no other reason more than that. They want to be a person, because you can look at a page and in 3 seconds tell whether or not you want to be there. An algorithm can't. An algorithm cannot do that, and they've gone as far as they really can with algorithms, which is why they're bringing AI into it. They need to now understand semantics and context and, you know, lots of different correlations. And this is all Google's job. So when we talk about this, I caution your listeners, that's just Google's job. Don't start getting into algorithms and did I just make this paragraph with the keyword density that it needs to. Don't do that. Because Google can tell when somebody's trying to do SEO better than they can tell whether or not the content's good quality from a human perspective by leaps and bounds, by an exponential huge amount. They can tell when somebody's trying to do SEO. So the very best thing you could possibly do is not try to do SEO, but be the passionate person who's got really good content that has got to get out that message. That's your SEO now. So I just wanted to put that in. Google wants to be a human. They wanted to from 98 until now. That's why they started following links in a most remedial, primordial sludge crawling out of the puddle way, the beginning of Google. The first great idea they ever had was, well, maybe a page is really good because of the number of links and the number of people pointing to it from all over the web. Maybe that is an indicator of the quality of the content and therefore should be a really strong part of our search ranking algorithm. And they were right to do so, and it was really revolutionary. And without that kind of thinking, I bet we would never be as far along as we are today with the algorithm that they have and then developing AI to augment and better understand the web without that kind of thinking. Okay, I'm done.
So, Jack, I have a question for you.
So right now there are some platforms which are not indexable by Google or completely accessible by Google. At the same time, we have this passionate content creators who are focused on one type of content. They, you know, either they end up creating all videos or creating all audios. So they create a specific type of content that caters a specific type of audience. Now, with all this, you know, all this politics going online with the you know, between Bing and Google, where they have accessibility issues between different sites, and right now having all these different huge number of types of content. Now we were thinking about just having video sites like YouTube, but right now even we have Periscope kind of live sites. So you get on there, you produce something on screen live, and then it gets destroyed and removed off the internet in after 24 hours. So How do you suggest the users to leverage all this? What do you think are the top three things they need to do to make the most, to leverage the most out of all the platforms out there, and to make the most out of Google in the process?
Well, I think it's dangerous to equate everything that we do to what Google might think or whether Google can see it or not. And especially when it's like, you know, the content that just disappears in 24 hours. Like, there's a way that both of those things meet and match up, though. And that is, you can dig into places that are invisible to Google and Bing and Yahoo that you can bring out, first of all, a fresh audience. Because a lot of other people are so search engine minded, they won't even go there because they know it's an invisible thing, and they can only think in terms of search engine rankings. And if this doesn't help my rankings, I'm not interested in being there. Well, you've given up a really great source of traffic and a new audience reach by doing that. And if you can reach into a blind source and create content there, create engagement there, you're going to meet people who will actually affect your search engine rankings otherwise. Like, they'll start to follow you on Facebook, on your page, which is visible to Google. And Google's watching your engagement there. And more importantly, Facebook is watching your engagement there. And it affects your edge rank as to how well you do in engaging people on Facebook. How much of your messages get out to all those people on their timelines is directly affected by how engaging you are. If you won some of your people, some of your audience from a blind spot on the web, then you've won, and you've won with SEO. But you can't even get to that point if SEO is all you're thinking about, because you won't publish on those sites if you think it's a blind spot. Google won't ever see it, so I'm not interested. So that's part of your question, but I know you had three things you wanted me to say.
Okay. So, you know, in the past, in a few years before, we had this called the dark internet, where Google doesn't access somewhere around 98%
right.
of the internet, they said, were dark. But right now those definitions are really out of the way. Right now dark internet is even very famous sites, because Google cannot access, that's not classified as dark internet these days. But like
yeah.
you said, going to those places and attracting those audiences are going to be very powerful, because not many do that, but doing that effectively brings about a huge difference, and indirectly it affects the rankings in Google, because it all comes out to light at one point or other. So if your audience are not supposed to think direct, and they're not supposed to do things for something like, you know, if I do this, I get that. So the direct relationship is gone right now. Things are becoming more indirect, and things are becoming more relationship-based. So what would be your biggest
Good.
Advice? You know, I understand that you told about the passion and showing the passion out, and that we are not supposed to care about Google. But is there one advice which is powerful according to you, which can help bring about the shift in the mindset? Because whatever we talk about, whatever we learn, end of the day, in digital marketing, the mind is going towards, okay, what do I do now so that Facebook or Google takes notices of us and does something to us and become a millionaire? So what is that one advice can shift that mindset?
Let's say you've discovered eternal life. You found the fountain of youth, and you're not talking about a supplement company. I'm not talking about you being a marketer. I'm talking about you're walking in the woods, and you literally found the fountain of youth. You've discovered the secret to eternal life. And you're presently the only person on the planet who knows about it and where it is. and you've decided that the entire world must know about this incredible thing. It's the best, it's the biggest discovery of all human eternity and mankind. What do you do? What would you do? If it wasn't your business, if it wasn't, I've got to do this, I've got all these things, would you immediately forget about everything else in life? You got a to-do list in your backpack when you discovered this. How meaningful is anything on your to-do list right now? You're staring at the fountain of youth. The whole world doesn't know about it yet. So then what would your plan become to reach everybody on the planet as quickly as you freaking can? Well, I mean, it's easy, right? You just tell somebody like Oprah that you discovered the fountain of youth. You get on Oprah, and now everybody in the world instantly knows about it, right? But you can't go on Oprah. There is a little restriction to this visualization. You have to pretend like those great big pieces of leverage aren't there, because we're just talking about the level where you are the one putting out the content. It's completely on your back. You're not using any leverage whatsoever. I would go to Oprah. You can't do that in this visualization. You got to carry it all on your shoulders. So you're going to go to Facebook. You're going to immediately say, well, how can I quickly get in touch with everybody in the world as quickly as possible? Well, you know that a lot of people, I dare say most people, are focused on Facebook. And they're opening up their apps on their phones right now to check for stuff. So that's a really big audience you can go to right now. Now, you only have your business page. You only have your personal page on Facebook. So, you know, you're only going to reach the people who are around, who are your friends, who can see the message at that point. All right, you go out, you do that. Fountain of Youth, everybody, here it is. Here's the map. I just want everybody to live forever. So I don't care about metrics. I don't care about retargeting. I don't care about crap. I just feel like if I could put my message out there, people would freak out about it. There's a second part to all of this, because I'm sure everybody's going, well, yeah, Fountain of Youth, that's not going to be hard to tell everybody in the world about. But this is the way I want you to feel about your product, about your service, about what you're doing, as if you have the Fountain of Youth. We'll talk about that. But so Facebook, all right, you got Facebook covered. And everybody who can see it right now, who's walking around, they felt their phone buzz in their pocket, they're opening it up, checking out, see what you got. So you've reached whoever you reached. Well, there's Snapchat, there's Twitter, there's LinkedIn, there's Google+, there's SlideShare, there's YouTube, there's all these other places. And immediately your mind would get very, very clear. All the clutter you have in it right now about your business and all the things you're juggling to try to get another person, one person, to just come to your email opt-in and do that. You're now thinking in terms of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions. How am I going to reach millions? How am I going to do that? You're going to start going to all of those systematically. You're going to make a video, and then you're going to put it on all the video sites. And you're going to put it on, you're going to go back to Facebook, because you know it only went to people. It only went to like 3 or 5 or 7% of the people who follow you. So that's 93% of the people haven't seen it yet. You can get them to see it if maybe you put a video up this time, the video you recorded on YouTube. So you go back and you do that. And you just keep thinking about ways, because your pure mission in life is, I just discovered something that humanity all wants. Everybody needs this. Everybody. And everybody will be so excited when they hear this. And I'm the one who's responsible for getting the word out. Now, all of these things end up working synergistically together to conspire to make what you want to happen come true, which is your message grows. And it reaches more and more people, people far outside your immediate network. Those 3 or 5 people that you reached the first time you came out of the jungle from you know, and you got a Wi-Fi signal so you could first put something on Facebook with a picture of the Fountain of Youth, the 5 people that were looking at that moment have told a combined 150. They've shared it out, and then those 150 have shared it. Holy crap, this is what viral is. Those 150 share it. Everybody's going to share this, right? And so this is the pure way of looking at it and visualizing it and getting outside whatever box you've put yourself in. We all get into trances when we're working along and it's just Tuesday and I got all this stuff to do, I got a call, I got this, I got a blog post to do. It gets Tuesday out of your head. It gets everything out of your head and really clearly, pristinely focuses you on your mission. Now, the second part of this is to take care of all of the objections. Well, that's easy, Fountain of Youth. I'd go to Oprah, or I'd, you know, it's a big world discovery. It's not hard to sell that. It's hard to sell what I have. It's hard to get content out and get it paid attention to and get it traction and engagement when it's just about three-legged stools. which is what I sell. So it's not fair to use that. Well, actually it is, because your mindset controls how many three-legged stools you're going to sell. It's not your skills in advertising, marketing, content marketing, or anything else. It's your mindset that actually controls whether or not any of that work gets done to the degree that it needs to get done. So while you might not think of three-legged stools in the same way that you think about the discovery of the fountain of youth, you do need to be as proud of your product and proud of what you do to think about how your content would look different if it was the fountain of youth that you're selling, that you're showing everybody, that you're getting everybody excited about. And that starts you thinking about how you write copy, how you put stuff on. What are you going to even actually put on Snapchat? What are you going to put on Twitter? You know, what are you going to be leading people to? And a lot of people don't feel like they've got the fountain of youth as a product or a service that they sell. In fact, most people don't. They think it fits into some hierarchy of importance in the world, and whatever you sell, whatever you're trying to get a message out about, you have placed yourself in a hierarchy of importance. And on the scale of fountain of youth, you're not so important. You don't feel so important. So your copy, your content, where you put it, how you get engagement, all of that kind of gets colored by that brush, and that really, really hurts us. So, you know, I don't know if that even answered your question. I keep going off on that tangent, but I feel like that's the most important thing that people, you know, need to be focused on. Nobody even knows about that.
Yeah, I think it makes complete sense, because Google is looking for authentic and things that are powerful and strong and original. And if someone feels that their product or service is real, it's true and it's powerful, like Fountain of Youth, that emotion that they bring out and that cheer and it's a feeling that is very unique when you have something which nobody has, or you can make an impact which nobody makes. When you have that passion and you put that out in words or audio or video in any form out there, it does have a pattern to it, and Google definitely can pick it up, because Google does not want to show things which are boring, which are usual, or which are mediocre to people. It wants to show to people things which are extraordinary and authentic, and that makes a huge impact. You know, to me, personally, when I talk about virality with people who come and ask me, okay, how do I get things viral? I would say viralness is not something that you can program. It is not something that you can just create a nice content around it and distribute. It starts with the core of the business. Till now, all the real, true, powerful viral campaigns, they started because they had a purpose. The business had something that they want to share, which resonated with every person it went through. So virality is not about, you know, going and adding some 10,000, 50,000 Facebook likes and getting every friend of ours to share and trying to get it to more eyeballs. But it's about touching the hearts of people, making more people agree with what we have to say, more people to be excited with the touch of our content with them. So it starts more from within the business, from the heart of the business, and it just comes out and paints everything on its way with the color and brightness that it goes viral and people start sharing it. So, yeah, I'm excited right now.
Well, I mean, that really has a lot to do with it. As soon as you start talking about your thing and you're really, really super excited about it, and we all really need to get excited. Like when you first thought about your business, everybody sat up in bed late at night or otherwise had that epiphany moment. The excitement you had at that moment, oh, my God, I'm onto something. 4D story, holy crap, the world needs to know, or whatever it might be. There was a time when you were so excited about that, and your excitement starts to wane as soon as you start to look at the work ahead. Oh, I got to write copy. I got to get a website. I got to get a domain. Oh, crap. I just want the world to know. And then, you know, you got to find a way to somehow keep up that energy and remember. And the easiest way to keep it up is to remember why you did it in the first place. Why did you get the idea? Or when you got the idea, how did you feel? Just remembering that will make you feel better. And then it will propel you through massive amounts of things that you should be doing and keep that passion going. Otherwise, I mean, that's really, in my years, it's been 18 years now of helping people with business. And everybody knows the statistics, the horrible statistics of how many people go into business and go out of business within a couple of years. I think it's completely because of energy, completely. it might, you know, I mean, some people have bad ideas, so there's that. And nobody liked it. Nobody liked the thing. But sometimes people don't like the thing because they can tell you don't even like it. Not enough to really be excited about it, enough to get them excited, because they're going to use your energy. It's not even your energy to get the stuff done that you need to get done in your business. You also have to have enough energy to give that energy to the people you want to attract to your products and services. They're coming with no energy whatsoever. They're like, oh, here's an ad, or oh, here's an article. Let me read that. Okay, I'm starting to get excited, or not. And they're pulling the energy that you put into it out of it and putting it in themselves. And to the degree that you do a good job with that is how many people are going to come and opt in and buy and follow and engage and everything else. So if you think about it in terms of that.
What you're saying, Jack, it's just so true, because it seems to me that the new economy is a purpose-driven marketplace. And I certainly can say I've achieved miracles with incredibly, in the past, incredibly janky marketing techniques, because I was so clear about what I was doing and who it served and why it was important and what it was doing for those people and all the people they would be able to impact, you know, and the leaders who would be trained by what I was doing so that they could change the world and create open hearts and healthy communities. And people were just like, yeah, I'm in for that, you know. And I think also the other thing I see in what you're saying is both the internal game of a passion-driven entrepreneur, but also the external game of creating a marketplace that reflects those passions.
We are going to take a quick commercial break. I'm going to come back. When I come back, I want to segue from what you just said, Samantha, in the last 15 minutes or 13 minutes of our show to talk about magnetic content and the idea of attracting people with your content in that vein. We'll be right back.
Ever wish that you could take the mystery out of search engine results? Well, now you can. Discover how you can dominate the first three pages of Google with Key Difference Media. Go to keydifferencemedia.com/dominate. Content marketing unlocked. Do you have a charity that's stalled or struggling to find donors, or simply unorganized? The Art of Charitable Giving can help you with programs and strategies to boost your leadership, management, fundraising, and marketing. We've turned charitable giving into an art. Theartofcharitablegiving.com.
All right, so around the subject of everything that we've been talking about is Google looking at us and trying to relate to us as a person, and us trying to relate to other people, and we've really talked about this process of inbound marketing from different perspectives. But when it comes all the way down to content, and we've created our kind of reverse engineered our own process for creating magnetic content. But I'd like to hear from you, what like Samantha said at the end of that conversation, and this was a big piece that you and I talked about before, Jack, was what is it about that piece of content that, you know, you didn't mean for it to go viral, you didn't mean for it to have so much effect, but it just seemed to really connect, you know, from a reverse engineering perspective when we look at that, along the lines of the story, along the lines of being your authentic you, and as we call it, showing up in your 4D character, showing up as who you really are in that super self of yours, which you get to by focusing. When you put that out there, I believe it naturally attracts people who are, in their own unconscious way, aligned with you. And so when you are very clear about how you create your content around being clear about who you are and what you're doing and that purpose, I think you come out there with a clarity that naturally creates an attraction process. And I believe that each piece of content needs to contribute in context to that entire magnetic appeal by very clearly representing who you are, what you're all about, and across the entire spectrum of what we as humans are expecting you to communicate across. We have it broken down into seven categories, but everybody may have their own approach. But I think that's what Google is sniffing out. They're starting to recognize, and we're starting to need to format our content in such a way that it is very clear and compelling in an overall way, as well as right down to the individual piece.
Yeah.
And create a magnetism.
Well, yeah, so, it's a big, big topic, right? I think that's why you have to have a radio show and a lot of content to to get and dig through this. But one of the things I never really touched on today was the whole idea of who you're trying to meet up with, sort of like how the SpaceX pod got birthed to the International Space Station. There's actually two parties involved there. There's the space station, and there's the pod. And on the ground, they had to build the pod to exact specifications in order to meet up with the space station and not have any problem, because there's no way to fix it up there. They had to be perfect. The holes and everything have to match. And it's not that clean. It's not really an engineering problem. Maybe it's a social engineering problem. When it comes to humans, the same kind of idea is absolutely applicable, which is you can have all the passion in the world that you want, and you can have all the desire to get that message out that you want, but there has to be somebody on the other side that is perfectly suited to match up with you on that energy and on that message. And if there's not, you can actually be extraordinarily passionate about something and get no traction at all in the world, because you're passionate about something that apparently nobody else in the world is. And they just see your stuff and they're like, I don't care about this. This is not something I'm interested in. That's a targeting problem, right? Let's say that there are really passionate people just like you about, they're passionate on the other end, on the male-female end, or however you want to put it in engineering terms. They have the exact need that you have a desire to fulfill. And right at the right time. So there's time and space involved and everything else, but there have to be those people. And if it's just a targeting problem and your stuff is falling on deaf ears because they're just not the right audience for it, well, it's just it's a matter of going and finding your audience and targeting better. And then the passion comes through. And then, you know, the same 100 different people who are really targeted will have a radically different reaction, which is to say they'll have a reaction at all to your stuff. They'll comment and share and everything else. And it's like, you know, like you said earlier, you could do some really weird marketing, you could pull all the bad moves, you know, against everything that you've ever learned about marketing and still be successful, because the passion shines through. The audience that wants to hear about that has been matched up with that message, and everything is good to go. So in order to create that stuff, you can mess it up. You can have not necessarily bad grammar, but you can't even do that. I've watched people do that. It's what they're talking about, what they're fired up about, and how badly you need to be in their sphere of influence to solve a problem, to satisfy an itch in entertainment or art or whatever it is, a desire for information. Whatever that is, you go out and we seek people for that. That's what a search engine is for. We go to Google and we say, who knows about this thing? I need to know more about this thing. This thing's really bothering me, or I'm really interested in it, or I need to hear it again. I need to see it again. Or I need to see somebody else doing something with it. That I've seen all the other stuff and I want to see something new. I want to read, hear, experience something new. And if you're right there with your thing that satisfies that exact query, and then they click on it, and it goes to wherever it's hosted, whatever kind of content it is, and you're sitting there talking about that exact thing in a new way, in the way that they ask Google for it. I want something new. I'm looking, in my mind at least, I'm thinking, I want something new. I'm going to put this keyword in, and I hope Google gives me something new, something exactly what I want. I'm looking for something that I hope is the number one search result for the exact thing that I'm looking for. There's nothing more satisfying and universal. Everybody in the world knows the experience of going to Google, clicking on the result that you see, and getting exactly what you want. It's not that common of a thing, really, truly. That's why Google has a thing called bounce rate. They watch people come back all the time because they were not satisfied with what they got, and they had to come back.
Absolutely, absolutely. We kind of have that AAA approach, is my authenticity and your attention. As long as I amplify what I'm doing, you're going to hear me because I'm authentic and you're paying attention to that authenticity. We just have to have that amplification in the middle to make sure that everyone in every dark corner does hear and see our authenticity, because there's a lot of static out there that we have to shine through. But I think that's absolutely the process that you go through.
Absolutely.
It's interesting because I've always said that in the coming age, the word grow is going to be a very ideal word. It's going to be something that we're all going to have to embrace. We're going to have to embrace the idea of growing into a holistic approach to doing business. We're going to have to embrace the idea of being serious about regenerative approaches on how we use our time and use our money and use our influence and the things that we think about along the lines of giving back and sustaining, you know, what it is that we have and growing a future for ourselves. I mean, the big questions seem to come home to every single one of us every time we craft a piece of content. We literally have to start with what, again, is my worldview? What, again, is my approach? And that clarity and that understanding of who we are kind of induces a growth that as you grow, your clarity on the web, your footprint out there becomes much more magnetic, much more powerful. And then along comes the Key Difference Media. Along comes someone who can amplify that content and put you everywhere. And all of a sudden, those principles of your own life start to reap the benefit across the web. I mean, if you're somebody who carries with you a level of loyalty that is, you know, impeccable, that loyalty in itself ought to be projected across the web so that the same values you get out of life, of having loyalty in your life, the same things you get, you can extend across the web and get that same value extracted from that paradigm. I think that's kind of how you shape your content. Really, shape it around who you are. Create yourself out there and let that attract the people that are going to work with you, that are lined up with you. It's interesting, we tend to, we talk about the 80-20 law and how it affects so many things in business, but I often wonder if we were better aligned with the audience that we're attracting and better filtering out those we're not naturally attracted to, would our 80-20 start to kind of shift and be a natural path towards better customers, better interactions, and better magnetism in everything we do? Well,
it makes 80-20 seem very cynical, doesn't it?
It kind of does.
It's like
somebody
threw up their arms and said, well, that's just how the world is, 80-20. We're just going to all have to live with that. We're just all going to have to just swallow that and live in that world and swim in it. And actually, that's just somebody else's rule that somebody made up. And it connected with an audience that was desperate to have someone that matched their feeling on the issue as well. And that's how it went completely crazy. It's quoted in every single book in the world. And but it's wrong. It's not true. It's something that somebody made up, and we all swallowed it hook, line, and sinker.
It's a good model that you turn around and utilize to as a lens. But the reality is we always package the lowest common denominator, and it's true. I believe this is where we kind of settle. This is our settle across humanity. It's kind of like saying, yeah, we use 10% of our brains. That's about it. You know, we don't push that limit. But when you start thinking along these other lines, and I call it 4D, because you're naturally shifting some of those old paradigms to where all of a sudden you recognize that, wait a second, there's more power here than I have been extracting. There's more energy for me to work from. And this is what he, when he gets into his full blossom of talking about content marketing, will blow you away with the versatility of the message and the magnified by the different platforms that you can format to, the different perspectives you can change or you can create around a single message. Suddenly, you take that and you magnify it across all these social media channels with the power and impact that Key Difference Media brings to their process and its stability and its predictability and analytical ability to tweak it and kind of work with it. Man, what you end up with is a very functioning amplifier that you can form right down the line to who it is you're trying to tell the world you really are. And now your magnetism is getting every ounce of opportunity. I love it from that perspective. Who wants to take us out? We got 30 seconds left. Jack, tell us where you can be found and give us something to take away.
Well, you can find us at theleveragists.com. leverageblackbook.com, and you can pick up the book on a lot of the things that we talked about today, the Leverage Black Book at leverageblackbook.com. And, yeah, thanks. I love talking to you guys because we're all doing the same kind of stuff. It's awesome. And this is what I'm passionate about. This is the word for me that needs to get out. It's like being in the Matrix and just being Neo and freeing everybody from the Matrix. Every single time I get on a show, every single time I put something out there, another person gets free of the Matrix, of a blind understanding of rules that were made by other people about how the world works and how business works, and they're lies. They're not true. And you guys have figured it out. You're outside the Matrix. And you have a platform to help people understand that and pull them out too. So I'm so glad you helped me, and I could help in any way that I could today and be on the show. Thanks so much.
You were totally awesome. Thank you, Jack. We have stopped streaming. Does anybody want to add anything to the conversation along the lines of what we've been talking to just make sure it gets on the recording?
I just love the win-win-win that is the new economy. You know, thank you, Jack, for your graciousness and your passion, and thank you to Karnika for the incredible depth and precision that you bring, and thank you, James, for stirring the pot so beautifully and powerfully. And, you know, in this 4D is very much about win-win, as I see it, and so is content marketing. It's about people getting more of what they want. It's about businesses feeling successful at telling the narrative, sharing the narrative that they're weaving. And it's just a joy to be here with you all. Thank you.
Awesome. You got anything, Mr. Key?
Nope, I'm good.
All right. Jack, it has been a pleasure and an honor. I love how you unpack everything. I look forward to future conversations.
Me too. Thanks, guys.
All right, right on. See everybody later. Thank you. Have a good week. Bye-bye.